Hi, and welcome to Consider This. I'm Sharad Kutan here in Malacca. My guest today is Chan Su Chong, the political secretary for a YB Khoo Phoe Tiong, who is the MP for Kota Malacca. We're talking today about the shape of policymaking in Malacca, the needs of the state, and if it's been driven by evidence-based research on social, cultural, and economic issues. Su Chong, perhaps we could begin with you giving us a broad picture of what's been happening over the years in terms of state government, where it's looking to in terms of its own development agenda and what's driving it in terms of policy. And then we can begin the discussion about what we think are the top issues in Malacca today.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Shiva. Yeah. Well, first of all, I think we need to state the obvious that Malacca is a small state. So we have like a population of 1 million people in Malacca. Our state budget is extremely small, so 400 million per year, which is nothing. You know, some ministries have budgets way bigger than that, or companies for the fact. So in that sense, it's always been a challenge in Malacca to establish itself as an economic force. So like many other state governments, the paradigm has always been on economic growth, right? So the focus has been on GDP growth, creating new jobs and things like that. It works both ways. One, of course, it's important to have economic growth for people's prosperity and so forth. But then again, for a small state like this, when you are too obsessed with numbers in terms of GDP growth, your economic contributions and things like that, it might not suit your local needs. So one example I can give is that, you know, in the past decade or so, Malacca pushed a lot in terms of real property development. So if you drive around the town of Malacca now, you'll see a series of high-rise condos, mixed development and things like that. And locals know that these properties do not have a strong, solid local market. So who are the ones purchasing it? You get maybe, for example, investors or people who are speculating on real estates and things like that. And it has been a huge challenge in Malacca in that sense, because like I said, development means you want pretty numbers, right? So one of the easiest way, of course, is to go into property development. That's how they.
Yeah, and I wanted to. One of my biggest gripes, I think, being here in Malacca, is recognizing that in this Kota Laksmana area and one of the many parts of the reclaimed land, is that there are no pedestrian crossings. I mean, it's just like, you know, the urban design is woeful and doesn't reflect, you know, what could have been, as it were. So when we talk about that, I mean, some states in Malaysia have think tanks. They have that, you know, inform or at least attempt to inform the state governments about what's happening and what are the possibilities. What does Malacca have?
In Malacca, we have very few think tanks. A lot of these are, there are a couple of few of them are from the state government, but I've seen some of the content and not very evidence-based and not very sound in terms of their theories and also their outlook. But in Malacca, the primary institution that is driving economic development is what we call UPEN, Unit Perancangan Ekonomi Negeri, which is a state economic development building unit within the Chief Minister's Office. So they are the one equivalent to EPU at a federal level. So likewise, UPEN is at the state level. So they are the one who set the agenda in terms of the economic development vision and plans for the government. Unfortunately for me, having looked through a lot of their strategic documents and their development documents, it's very narrowly defined. And it's very insular in the sense that they don't look at new ideas. For example, Shivat, you mentioned about pedestrian walking. That's absolutely a crucial point. So there's no thinking, you know, how do we make Malacca a more sustainable city, for example, a livable city. So a lot of it is driven by very traditional kind of economic thinking, you know, growth. We need to have high economic growth. And
livability, you would think, would be a primary agenda of developing a new area, right?
Yes.
Especially if you want to attract foreign investors and people, say, Singaporeans to come.
Yep.
But let's perhaps, you know, we can shift very quickly to what Pakatan Harapan did during its, you know, short period as government. They did kind of rebrand an institute, and they called it Institute Tunpera, I understand.
Yep.
Wasn't that supposed to become the kind of think tank for the state government?
Well, I think Institute Tunpera was a good start. But then again, like I said, the primary decision maker and influence within the government is still UPenn and to a certain extent the local authorities and so forth. So the think tank, as far as I knew, tried to create new ideas, tried to push for new ideas, but at the end of the day, the economic agenda within the UPenn is very strong indeed.
What about business interests? Are business interests shaping the economic and political, economic and sort of and planning agenda of the state? You know, we think of developers actually being very influential.
Definitely very influential, because and the state is very welcoming towards them, because that is one of the easiest way for them to not only, of course they will say it's to grow the economy, but in actual fact, the Malacca state government faced a lot of pressure to raise their state revenues, right? Because like I mentioned, the state budget is only 400 million. There's really very little you could do from that. So state government look at different ways to raise revenue, and one of it is to work with private developers. So for them, development always means real property or building development. So that's why you see high-rise condos, mixed development. And recently, of course, not only recently, I mean for the past one or two decades, one of the easiest way for state government to make money is actually through land reclamation.
Okay.
So what the state needs to do is actually just provide the permission for you to reclaim the land. And in return, the company that gets the concessionaire to reclaim the land has to pay you a land premium. And 1/6, which I think has increased now, of the land that is being reclaimed will have to go to the government upon the completion of the reclamation.
Right.
So it's really creating money and land out of thin air. The state doesn't have to come up with a single cent. All they have to do is just give you the legal permission to do so.
Right.
And in return, the developers, companies get, of course, the land and have to pay a certain thing to the government.
Right. So one problem is raising revenues. The other problem is how you spend those revenues.
Yep.
But and also around, there's an whole set of other issues which have to do with the problems of the economy, the structure of the Malacca economy. And I understand from my conversations with people, there are no jobs for young people here. It's, you know, you are losing young people to other cities, to other countries. How can the state government, or does it even think it can resolve this issue?
Well, first of all, let me say that actually Malacca has a lot of potential. We have amazing young people, and that's one of the reasons why I came back here. In my time here with the Kota Melaka MP office in the past 2 years, we've met a lot of talented people who are very skillful in digital sense, in engineering and so forth, you name it. Secondly, I think a lot of people would think that Malacca's economy is very dependent on tourism. Half truth. So, yes, we are very known for our tourism industry, but the major economic sector in Malaysia, in Malacca, is actually manufacturing. We were the benefit of the industrialization policy back in the 1980s and 90s, and about 37-38% of our economic activity in Malacca is dependent on manufacturing. The problem is that in the past one or two decades, there has not been enough investment or moving up to the next level. That is the one that is important to retain talent and to create jobs, right? So if you look at Penang, for example, I was reading an article last week that Penang is developing a new Silicon Valley 2.0 in Batu Kawan, which attracted a lot of electronic and E&E multinationals to come, investing in high technology, next generation production and so forth. In Malacca, we are still stuck a little bit in the 80s and 90s. Why? I think it's has to do with the lack of imagination and vision. So we tend to follow a lot what is dictated by the federal government, right? So federal government had an amazing industrialization policy in the 80s and 90s, and then it sort of like fizzled down. And then during the Najib administration, there was a lot of focus on mega projects, right? So Malacca also, we're famous for mega projects. We had the Malacca Gateway. We have a monorail project, for example. So all these mega things looks good on numbers, but locals know it's not sustainable. It's not going to create you high-impact jobs, good jobs, and that's why people tend to leave to bigger cities. So if you look at Johor, for example, with the Iskandar region, KL, of course, the natural economic center, that's where people will naturally move to.
Right. So I can understand in manufacturing, as long as you're part of some global supply chain, you could actually grow even during a pandemic.
Yep.
But that's true of the hospitality and tourism sector, right? I mean, it has been devastated by the pandemic.
Yep.
has the pandemic provided an opportunity to rethink then Malacca's relationship to this sector? Is it some? Is it a sunset industry? Is it something that Malacca should discard? Or how does it reconfigure its relationship to what is obviously a very lucrative industry, yep, to tourism?
The tourism industry has collapsed owing to the pandemic, especially this year. The second or third lockdown took a hard toll on it. Last year, a lot of businesses could still sustain, but this year, it's really where the cash flow start to dry up and things. So you have a lot of tourism-related businesses, whether it's large hotel, right? So for example, Ramada shut its door. We have a lot of F&B businesses that are dependent on tourists also shutting down. But with the reopening of the economy recently, we do see a beginning of the industry coming back. But unfortunately, like you say, there's no fundamental rethinking of the kind of tourism industry that is sustainable, that is unique to our heritage, right? So a lot of it is F&B, a lot of it is the kind of very short-term service base for fun and things like that. During Pakatan's time, we did have a vision to have more knowledge-based tourism in Malacca. Ecotourism, knowledge-based and things so forth, that would expand outside the traditional tourism centre in Malacca. So these are the kind of fundamental thinking that we need to have, and it needs to be driven by the state government.
Okay, very quickly, we don't know who's going to win the election, but regardless of who wins, what government is formed, is it possible to preserve policy making and, you know, an evidence-based policy making in a way that it can inform the state without necessarily being subject to the vicissitudes of politics? I mean, you know, is that even a possibility that the best ideas come in and they can inform government regardless who that government is?
I think that is necessary and indeed very important. And my point of view is that we need different stakeholders to get more involved and more engaged in policy areas. So even if you're a politician, whether you're a member of parliament or whoever wins and becomes the next government, of course they're the primary duty bearer. But then again, private stakeholders, right? Businesses. And for me, most important is actually civil society. And that's what we're also trying to build here in Malacca. So for example, could we have an independent think tank or independent group of civil society that push this agenda to tell the government that, hey, not only about economic growth and GDP, let's talk about what really the community wants, what the people want. And I think we need that kind of discourse to happen in Malacca. And then in the long term, we'll see hopefully some sustainable change in the way that we think about Malacca's economic growth and development.
Thank you so much, Su Chong.
Welcome.
I've been speaking to Chan Su Chong. He is an activist here in Malacca. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Consider This. Hi, and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Sharad Kutan, and I'm in Malacca, and we're going to continue our discussion about social issues and social policy in the state as it faces its next challenge with the polls on Saturday, the 21st of November. I'm here with Caroline Chin. She's a lawyer, a social activist, and part of a non-profit group called Agape Care Society. And Caroline, thank you so much for joining me. Understand Malacca, like the rest of the country and the world, been through a crisis with the pandemic. We've had, of course, the political upheavals in Malacca, and this election is the cause of yet more political upheaval. The question is whether an election of a new government is going to solve the problems. The heart of it is, does government have a plan? And from your point of view as a social activist, what do you see as the deficits or possible strengths that they have here in Malacca?
Well, I think the pandemic has exposed a lot of structural problems that we have. And when we went into lockdown, As a social organization, we could see many problems on the ground, which people like us, we want to try to address it. But I think one of the problems that we have, right, as NGO working, meeting the needs of the poor and needy, right, there is this lack of connect, or lack of what you call it, like the government doesn't really facilitate people like us, right, working on the ground, trying to help those who are affected. And I think this is one thing that I, as somebody who is working in a social organization, that we would like to see that there will be more, they will make it easier for people like us, right, on the ground to help those who are affected.
Right. Is it because of a highly bureaucratic system, or is it just inefficiencies? What exactly is going wrong? Here you are filling a gap that the government can't fill, and yet you're prevented from doing so, despite your good intentions. What's going on?
Yeah, you see, because maybe it's a communication thing, right, between those who make policies, and when the policies are announced, right, by Putrajaya, or it's publicized, and we try to get clarity from the local welfare department, but they have no knowledge about some of the aid that has been announced, or even the SOPs for us, right, to operate and to go out and give aid. So there's this hindrance, and it prevents us from, you know, moving quickly to assist. And actually, it's actually frustrating at times, because they just don't assist us. They cannot assist us.
Well, it's paradoxical, right? But okay, let's dive down a bit into this, or get more granular. I understand one of the issues, and a lot of social activists are concerned about, is the kind of education deficit that's come out of the pandemic with kids, and the presumptions that that policy of putting education online was going to fill that gap. Malaysian schools closed record-breaking, I think, globally, you know, for multiple weeks compared to, say, Singapore. I think it was 34 weeks in Malaysia, about 4 weeks in Singapore in terms of school closures. What was the Melaka experience in terms of the promises and policies that were made in Putrajaya with regard to addressing that issue?
I think there was this announcement that there was that they were giving out laptops, tablets to students, right, to empower them with online learning. But this was limited to certain states, and Melaka was not one of them. And
was there a reason?
I have no idea, but it's clearly specified that those certain states received it, but not us. And on the ground, we see that a lot of children have been left behind. And the response by the state, right, at that time, I think, was too slow. And they were simply left behind.
So for you as a social activist, you're saying government's too bureaucratic, if it's responsive, it's very slow. How do social workers and voluntary groups and civil society negotiate that? I mean, is it just gridlock? Is it your paralysis, or what happens then?
I think depends very much on the department concerned, right? Not to put anybody down, but we have had officers, right, who were, despite some restrictive SOPs, right, which were in place, for example, that if we want to give out food baskets as an NGO, we have to actually have RELA present. So it's not practical. It's not a practical thing. This kind of policies that they make doesn't facilitate us reaching out and giving aid.
Do they listen to NGOs and stakeholders? When you come and tell them, look, I understand what you're trying to do, but it doesn't work, do they respond? Do they tweak those SOPs? Are they open to changing things to facilitate stakeholders like yourselves delivering the aid that's necessary?
I think it's very tough actually dealing with this, because when we deal with state level department, right, normally we get less than desirable replies, and mostly it's run around, and then we have to try and contact Putrajaya, and then again there is the bureaucracy again, so it is actually tough. And so sometimes we just have to just use our common sense and just do it,
right? Power
because
through.
Because if we're going to wait for all their approvals, right? Approvals, we cannot move.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to ask if we can just sort of brought back, because a lot of the problems that Malaysia experienced during the period of the pandemic were actually long-standing problems that are coming to a head, right? In Malacca specifically, Caroline, what do you think are the serious issues, social and economic issues, that are going to impact the state over the next coming decades?
Okay. One, I think if you talk about economy, because we are very much dependent on tourism, and I think this pandemic has shown us, right, how crippling it can be when we are so dependent on tourism, where so many families were affected because the breadwinner is working in the tourist industry, and their income stream has been cut off. And so the other thing that we see in Malacca is they always say that the young people, right, will always cannot stay in Malacca because there are not enough opportunities. So it's quite common to see that the older folks remaining here, and the children will move to the city, or even some of them, they don't come back.
Right. Yeah. So we got two major issues. Work for young people and quality work, right? We're talking about good wages that will attract them rather than send them running to places where they get better work. And also the question of the economy, the structure of the economy. Now the question is, do you see any of the coalitions and having a plan to address this in a meaningful way?
I've not seen it. I have not looked at their manifesto. I know briefly their tagline, but I've not looked into detail what plans they have for this. But I think it's something that we seriously need to look into, because these fault lines have been exposed, right? And if ever we are, you know, we cannot afford to go through this again, because most businesses have been closed for so long. And we just started opening most services in October, and now we are looking at elections. So it was quite, it's quite a frightening thought.
Right, that, fingers that crossed, it's not because, a super spreader event.
Yeah, because
right?
It's quite a frightening thought that we have been so like crippled, right? A lot of businesses have been closed, a lot of shops have been closed.
Caroline, very quickly, you know, people always assume that a new government will bring something new to the table. In Malaysia, we've had, you know, three, maybe four, depending how you look at it, governments in a very short space of time. Have you found a significant change in the responsiveness of bureaucrats, the responsiveness of political leaders when you see these political shifts happening? Are they reaching out to stakeholders? Do they want to have these conversations where they listen to you before they start planning and making announcements?
We saw a little bit of that in the first 22 months. But I think I really didn't see real engagement. Because if you are serious about engaging stakeholders, right, then it cannot be a one-off session, right, with all your programs, and it has to be a continuous engagement if we want to really look at some of the issues that we are facing on the ground and see what we can do to, you know, to address this and
What stops, do you think, politicians, very quickly, your kind of your hypothesis, what stops politicians from doing more serious and sustained engagement with stakeholders in order to provide better policy responses?
What stops them? I don't know, but I think a lot of their solutions are just short-term, and they go for populists to be seen to, you know, it's like applying Band-Aid, and it's not really making long-term change, because you're just helping, just applying the Band-Aid when there's an injury to be seen to be helping them at that time, but you're not addressing the root cause. What's the real problem? I think education is one of them. I think if we can address this issue about kids who are disengaged, because our system is such that so much focus on academics and the teachers are focused on that. So those who cannot cope, right, drop out, are disinterested, and then we have this cycle again. This vicious cycle that we see. So a lot of the people that we are helping is like, because they have very little education, low skills, and so they are always badly affected when things like this happen, because they are daily wage earners.
Right, and that's something you think the government
should address. We should address that.
All right, thank you so much, Caroline.
I've been speaking to Caroline Chin. She is a lawyer and activist, and also works with a non-profit called Agape Care Society here in Malacca. That's all we have for you on Consider This. I'm Sharad Kutin, only on Astro One E.